Suda Bay White versus Malcolm White. Mr. Johnson, is it?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Good afternoon, and may it please the court. I am Michael Johnson, pro bono counsel to the appellant Suda Bay White, mother. Ms. White appeals the circuit court's registration of a Swiss custody order. The circuit erred, and this court should reverse. Now, this is not a custody case. It's a due process case. That's because the Swiss order was entered by a court that had no jurisdiction to apportion custody.
Can I ask you about that? I hate to interrupt you, but your time, as you know, goes very fast here. There's no dispute that Switzerland has jurisdiction over the custody issue, right?
Switzerland as a country does, yes, right. But not any court in Switzerland or any functionary. It has to be.
Why is it that we decide then which of the two judges in Switzerland has jurisdiction at that time, why, it's a two-part question, why is that issue such a violation of international human rights that an American court should tell the Swiss which of their two courts has jurisdiction?
I might say the Swiss are not exactly known for violating people's human rights as a general proposition.
I agree with that, Your Honor. It's a civilized country. They have their own system. But I want to first address something in Judge Beal's question. We are not here. This court's duty is not to tell the Swiss court that it made an error of Swiss law. Absolutely not. And that, I think, is where Judge Tran went off the track a little bit. We did not ask him to, and he could not sit as a court of review of the Swiss decision as a matter of Swiss law. Swiss law. But in this country, to be registered in Virginia, a custody order has to comport with American principles of due process. It can't be that any judgment that any country declares valid under any principles of jurisdiction has to be registered and enforced.
Let me interrupt you and follow up on Judge Beal's question. One thing that he left out of his question, which to me is at least significant, is that here your client participated in the Swiss litigation, submitted herself to the Swiss courts, and now complains about the result. Now, she complains about on due process grounds, but it seems to me she's collaterally attacking that order in the first instance.
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. She agrees. As a matter of Swiss law, that court had jurisdiction, and in Switzerland, the law is valid. But the question before Judge Tran and the question before this court is whether in Virginia the order could be registered. And to be registered in Virginia, it had to comport with American principles of due process. The closest analogy in American law is probably removal and remand. When a state court proceeding is removed to the federal courts, the state court immediately loses jurisdiction. We cited a Supreme Court case called Tubman, where the state court continued to act with the consent of the parties.
Let me stop you, because I'm looking at the statute. Judge, I know Judge Tran drew the distinction you say he shouldn't have drawn. The statute, and Judge Tran drew the distinction between registration and enforcement. Looking at the statute 20-146.26, there's only three requirements for registration. And, you know, a letter or other document requiring, you know, I won't repeat them all, but it seems to me the record reflects all of them exist here. Due process, of course, is not one of those elements, and it seems to me it's more properly related to enforcement of an order as opposed to registration of an order. But tell me where I'm wrong about that, if you seem to be drawing that distinction.
Absolutely, Your Honor. I agree that the simple text of 146.26 doesn't address due process. So we have to look at 146.29 and 146.31, which address enforcement. And those provisions would make no sense if due process couldn't be raised at registration, because, and we look at 29D, the court will order that the petitioner may take immediate physical custody of the child unless, one, the child custody determination has not been registered, and then a due process defense is available, but two, so if the foreign custody order has been registered, the only defenses available to enforcement are that the order has been vacated, stayed, or modified by a court.
What specifically is the due process complaint here?
That the Swiss court that entered the custody order that father sought to have registered entered it at a time when it lacked subject matter jurisdiction. And it's very narrow here because in almost no other...
Stop. Okay, before my brain gets bent out of shape here, let me just parse what you just said and make sure I understand it before we go any further. Due process, at least the concept as it's embodied in this country, deals with concepts of fundamental fairness, notice, that sort of thing. Clearly, we don't have a notice, and typically these procedural due process issues come up in terms of notice. Clearly, there's no notice problem here because she participated in the litigation, it seems to me. Now, the court issued an order, which you now assert violates due process. And I'm trying to understand in what way the Swiss court, court order, I should say, violates, are we talking procedural due process here? Because
yes,
you certainly had, what's the lack of notice? What's the procedural due process? You say jurisdiction, but that doesn't implicate due process, it seems to me.
It certainly does, Your Honor. Notice and opportunity to be heard aren't notice and opportunity to be heard by a neighbor or the traffic court if the case is about child custody. It's notice and opportunity to be heard by a tribunal with jurisdiction to resolve the dispute. And that never happened here because the court that entered the custody order lacked jurisdiction to resolve the dispute. It's just like...
That gets back to Judge Beal's initial question, which is what role should this court play in determining what... foreign in every sense of the word court has particular jurisdiction within their own statutory scheme.
As Morrison and Prashad suggest and state very expressly, at registration, the due process defense is available. So this court needs to address whether the Swiss court's proceedings comported with American notions and doctrine on due process.
We have a specific finding by a Swiss appellate court that the trial court order at issue was entered with jurisdiction.
Entered with jurisdiction based on retroactive ratification, and that can't happen.
But the finding by the Swiss court was jurisdiction was present. So now it seems to me we would have to overlay our American conceptions that you cannot have such retroactive conferral of jurisdiction. And that's the problem.
Yes, that's exactly the problem. That's exactly the problem. And that's exactly what happens in a removal and remand situation where the state court doesn't accept the removal.
Why can't the Swiss courts figure out at what point jurisdiction is conferred?
They did that, and they decided on February 1st, jurisdiction went from the separation judge to the divorce judge. Then in March, the separation judge entered the custody order at issue anyway, a time when it lacked jurisdiction. Then in May, something else happened that undid the February 1st event that transferred jurisdiction from separation court to divorce court.
But we have a facially valid Swiss order that, as Judge McCullough just alluded to, has been upheld by the highest court of that nation. You want us to go behind it and allow you to collaterally attack that order. Well, I don't know what else it could possibly be.
It's not an attack as a matter of Swiss law. It's a question of whether that proceeding comported with American due process. It couldn't have. The order was quorum non judice. It comes up not often, but frequently enough that there's a highfalutin Latin term for it, and it means the order was entered by a person, not a court. It's void ab initio. Under the precedent of the United States Supreme Court and the Virginia Supreme Court, it is void. It is bad everywhere and good nowhere. It cannot be enforced in Virginia. It violates due process. We look at the mayor.
Except here, the mother your client submitted herself to their jurisdiction.
Just as
Can we please finish asking our question before you start to answer them? Given that the mother has submitted herself to the jurisdiction of the court, why wouldn't that be an implicit waiver of any attack? I mean, she's clearly going to take the result, if it's favorable to her, and bring it back to the United States and try and enforce it.
So if that happened, then maybe the father would be making these arguments. But the order has to comport with due process to be registerable. And it's a subject matter jurisdiction issue that can't be waived. The order is void ab initio, as to its status in Virginia. Well, so that is not waivable.
Under the statute, the exception is, a court of this Commonwealth need not apply this act if the child custody law of a foreign country violates fundamental principles of human rights. Now, that was very carefully, as I understand it, negotiated language by the Hague Convention. And it was designed to be utilized only in egregious circumstances. How is this a fundamental violation of principles of human rights?
Well, the State Department commentary explains that it's actually not limited to the most offensive violations of human rights, torture, things like that, that it actually just goes to fundamental principles of law. And it is a fundamental principle of American law.
Excuse me, we're talking about fundamental principles of international law in the context of the Hague Convention, as Judge Beals just alluded to.
I don't believe that's the case, Your Honor. They're fundamental American principles of human rights. That's what the statute goes to. If the foreign proceeding violates fundamental principles of human rights, as we understand them here in America, and that means fundamental principles of law, fundamental freedoms. And the freedom to not have a judgment imposed by a court that has no power to do so is something that's been recognized by the Supreme Court since the 1800s. It is just deeply embedded
Where countries have a different organization of their system of justice, but are just as keen on recognizing human rights as the United States is, couldn't this be utilized in Great Britain and all sorts of places where their court system is organized differently than ours to say, okay, United Kingdom, you made a decision here that we wouldn't do in America, so therefore we're going to overturn it.
This does not
register it.
This does not go to the merits at all. This goes to the power of the court to decide the merits. And with great respect, I can't see how any court in Virginia would want to be in the business of registering and enforcing judgments entered by courts that had no power to render them. It's like taking a statement made by a neighbor or by a state court when the proceeding had been removed to federal court. And this happens not infrequently. The state court continues entering orders. And as a matter of law, those orders are null and void, no matter whether they're right, wrong, indifferent, whether the removal was defective and the state court recovers jurisdiction later. If it wants those orders to be effective, it has to go through the process again, redo the notice, opportunity to be heard, have a proper hearing at a time when the court has the power to resolve the dispute. That's not what happened here. It's very unusual that a court in a civilized country would enter a finding, as the Court of Appeals of Switzerland did here, that said jurisdiction transferred away from the separation court in February. It entered an order in March anyway.
Can two courts have jurisdiction over a single case?
I'm sorry?
Can two courts have jurisdiction over a single case?
In theory, it might be possible, but it wasn't.
Let me give you an example from our own jurisprudence. You might have a trial court that still has ongoing authority to adjudicate a criminal case, and we hear a bond motion. The guy wants to be released on bond pending the continuation of the proceedings as they're getting ready to appeal. So why can't Congress, the Virginia General Assembly, anybody, pass a law or rule of court that says, well, in this instance, there's simultaneous jurisdiction to deal with discrete aspects of a particular problem?
That may be possible, but that's not what happened in Switzerland. What happened in Switzerland is the Court of Appeals said, on February 1st, the separation judge lost jurisdiction. Jurisdiction went to the divorce judge. In March, the separation judge entered a custody order anyway. And it's only in May, something happened after the order, that somehow retroactively...
Right, jurisdiction was revested and given retroactive effect.
But the order entered absent jurisdiction was a nullity, void ab initio. The court that entered it was acting quorum non judice. It can't happen consistent with due process.
And I assume there have been no subsequent legal developments in Switzerland either way. For example, your law professor said, well, that decision by the appellate court was just flat out wrong. But I assume...
Well, professors say that about
us all the time. Well, right, right. But I assume there's no subsequent developments in Switzerland that would shed any light on the continuing validity of that decision?
Well, there aren't, but there really couldn't be, because the validity we're talking about here... Understand.
But it sure makes it easier when the Swiss courts themselves say there was no jurisdiction, as opposed to us saying, Swiss court, as a matter of our due process, you're wrong.
It would short-circuit the analysis, I agree with you, but since the Swiss system didn't do that, we have to look at their rule, and we have to take that Court of Appeals decision at face value, and it says retroactive jurisdiction applied. That can't happen. It's not consistent with American due process.
Just like it, let's say we said notice by posting at the courthouse satisfies due process, and a Swiss court looks at the validity of that and says we can't recognize that. That just doesn't comport with our notions of due process.
Correct. Or if the Swiss court said we have jurisdiction over the marital affairs of anyone of Swiss descent, whether they set foot in the country or not, we have subject matter jurisdiction and we don't need personal jurisdiction, that would violate due process. Triple talaq. Even the father here agrees that there are some forms of proceeding that are so offensive that they do violate due process.
So if the Swiss highest court in Switzerland had said, both of these judges, in its opinion, as far as we're concerned as the highest courts in Switzerland, had jurisdiction when these orders were entered, would you still be arguing what you're arguing to us today?
No, because if the Swiss law were that in February and March, when the proceedings took place, the separation judge actually had jurisdiction, we couldn't make this argument. Our argument is the court that ruled and entered the custody order lacked jurisdiction at the time it heard the evidence and at the time it entered the order. I see my time is up, and I appreciate the court's indulgence. Thank you very much. The circuit court should be reversed, the fee order should be vacated, and the proceeding should be remanded for a determination of fees in mother's favor.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Ms. Powell?
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Donald Powell, and I represent the appellant, Malcolm White. With regard to the question about whether the Swiss Supreme Court has ruled, it actually has as of July 8, 2014, in which it was affirmed the Swiss Court of Appeals. It was on a procedural nature.
Right, and my understanding from the record was that this jurisdictional issue was not taken up to it. So while there's an affirmance, there isn't further clarification of this discrete jurisdictional point.
There isn't, but I would imagine, and I'm not an expert in Swiss law, that if the Swiss court thought it was important enough, it could sua sponte take that matter up. But as it stands today, it has been up to the Swiss Court of Appeals. There has been no reversal, and so it is the law of the land in Switzerland.
Well, how do you respond to counsel's argument that because we don't recognize as part of our jurisprudence in the normal course of things, retroactive ratification of jurisdiction, that somehow that violates due process or fundamental human rights?
Judge, and I will respond to that. I think that you first need to look at the UCCJEA with regard to defenses to enforcement of an order. And the UCCJEA states five specific defenses all throughout the code section. 20-146.24A, if the foreign court failed to exercise jurisdiction in substantial conformity with the UCCJEA, I think Ms. White submits that did not happen, that Switzerland did have jurisdiction under the UCCJEA to make the order. Another exception is whether the order has been modified. That obviously has not been the case, and that is again under 20-146.24A. Another statutory defense is under 146.31, and that is the due process defense. So the argument, Judge, is that the court needs to look to the UCCJEA because it is basically a self-contained unit which talks about due process, subject matter jurisdiction, human rights violations. And 20-146.31, that is the due process defense. And under that enforcement, that Virginia could order return of a physical custody unless there's no jurisdiction, which hasn't been established, or it was vacated, stayed, or modified, or there was no notice. Another defense, which is the human rights, is 20-146.4, which is the international application. And as this court said in Prisiev, which I'm probably mispronouncing it, which I think Judge Beals was on the panel, a Virginia court must recognize and enforce a foreign custody determination if the facts would have supported a finding of jurisdiction by the foreign court. So the question that you have to ask, and then if it's answered yes, then I think that that's basically where your analysis ends, is did Switzerland, the sovereign, not a district court versus a circuit court, did Switzerland have jurisdiction to enter its order? And the answer is yes. And I believe that is
now,
where...
Are there travaux préparatoire or whatever that we can look to understand the ratification history of this particular legislative history or whatever that we can look to understand what was intended by due process and human rights in this particular context?
I do believe, Judge, that you could look to what the Switzerland, when it made its order in the May or the March 15th order, the Court of Appeals, when they affirmed the trial court, they went through the entire history. They went through the due process that was given. They went through the custody factors and the evidence that was presented. And that Court of Appeals went through the entirety of why it came to the decision that it did and why the separation judge was not wrong. And Judge, I think that it gets to a sticky wicket when we start telling sovereign nations how they are to decide in procedural. And this is truly a matter.
Well, you have to do that under if it's a pick whatever court that doesn't comply with due process, maybe no notice was given or no opportunity to be heard or to meet the evidence on that was presented and challenge it. Then we would have to tell the foreign court that it didn't comply with due process.
I understand, Judge, and all of the due process concerns are encapsulated in the UCCJEA. So the trial court have an obligation to determine if notice and opportunity.
It seems to me in context the due process references relate to procedural due process, notice and that sort of thing.
Yes.
The human rights aspects, I think the federal Register has the comment regarding the ratification that Judge McAuliffe alluded to. I won't read the whole thing, but I think in pertinent part it says this particular rule relating to human rights is not directed at developments which have occurred on the international level, but is concerned only with principles accepted by the laws of the requested state, either through the general international law and treaty law or through internal legislation. Consequently, so as to be able to refuse to return a child on the basis of this article, it will be necessary to show that the fundamental principles of the requested state concerning the subject matter of the convention do not permit it. It will not be sufficient to show merely that its return would be incompatible, even if manifestly incompatible with these principles. Secondly, such principles must not be invoked any more frequently, nor must their invocation be more readily admissible than they would be in their application to purely internal matters. It seems to me the reference to human rights, I think we're talking about if a child, for example, if returned to a particular country is going to be, you know, a sex slave or something of that nature, a child labor situation.
Exactly, Judge, and I think that you can look at, there's a case, the Tolan versus Fritagi case, it's cited in my brief, the Maryland case, in which it was in Maryland, but Maryland analyzed Japanese custody laws to determine whether or not they violated human rights and whether there was a fundamental fairness. And just like in that case, the Swiss court, they gave notice and opportunity to be heard. There were psychological evaluations taken. There was evidence heard. There were hearings upon hearings and appeals upon appeals. I think that it's very similar to this system of justice and where you can't say that this process violated fundamental human rights that rises to the level of what the Hague Convention was talking about. And Ms. White submitted herself to the jurisdiction. And I think this is more analogous in Virginia, where there's a JDR order and there's a circuit court order, and things keep going up on appeal and they get remanded back. And then at some point during this confusion, the juvenile court judge makes an order. Let's say that happens. And then this panel, the Court of Appeals, affirmed the juvenile court's judge order, even though someone says, they didn't have jurisdiction to do so because the circuit court judge did. So then If that happens and you determine the procedure that yes, this court had subject matter jurisdiction, for another state or for another country to come in and say that the way that our state has decided subject matter jurisdiction is wrong, I think that it goes...
It sort of defeats the purpose of the UCCJEA.
Exactly, Judge, and that is the whole point of the purpose. And I think, Judge, that reasonable jurists, they're going to disagree about decisions made by a court, but the decisions are the law. And application...
If you had a situation in which, just to give an example, Judge Humphreys mentioned if a child might end up in danger or in a sex slave situation, or if boy children and girl children were treated differently, or something that... Isn't that what the Hague Convention was largely designed to address through the negotiations?
It does, Judge. And again, you need to look at the UCCJEA because that is an encapsulating statute, which if the return of trial would be for a dangerous situation. There's an emergency jurisdiction, there's an emergency section under the UCCJEA which allows for Virginia to retain custody if you invoke that. If it's going to a country where they violate women's rights, then the human rights provision under the UCCJEA would cover that. So all the situations in which you are talking about, the important stuff, that's covered in the code. And that's the whole point of the code, Judge. And that's why I would say that Judge Tran read the statutes and he affirmed the valid Swiss order and it registered and enforced it here. And he did that appropriately. And so did Judge Sotelo in the lower court, and fees were awarded pursuant to that. And so I would submit, Judge, that Judge Tran should be affirmed on all counts. Unless you have any other questions on anything else.
And I guess on the question of attorney's fees and
yes.
costs, is it, do the parties agree that whoever prevails essentially has to be paid their attorney's fees and costs under the UCCJEA?
Yes, and Judge, you were involved in that case too, with the Tizenko case, and that case held that 20-143.33 applies when a party's conduct compels another person to invoke the jurisdiction in order to get the child back. And what Judge Tran did is that it's the prevailing party standard. And Judge Tran took evidence about whether or not that presumption should be rebutted. There was a second hearing, in fact, in May, which allowed Miss White to attend by phone. Because there was a kidnapping charge and she wasn't allowed to come to the United States, but she was allowed to present evidence by phone about her financial situation, about why she did what she did, and Judge Tran heard all of that, and it still was not enough to rebut the presumption. That's under 20-143.33, Article 3 of the code, which reasonable fees and costs should be awarded.
Can I ask you on the other assignment of error that
yes.
we haven't really touched on that much, and that is father's promise, if mother stayed in Switzerland during the court hearing, that he would as well. Can you further illuminate why he chose to come?
Yes, Judge. Father said that he was not going to do that because in Switzerland, that there was an allegation that father was trying to do the kidnapping to get a leg up in the civil case, and so he presented that to the judge, to the court. But it wasn't really to the court; it was just a letter. Miss White filed a motion to appear telephonically. Mr. White, through counsel, didn't. Opposed the motion, but put in an alternate remedy to stay the proceeding so that both parties could come. At that time, at the hearing, Judge Kasabian heard the hearing and asked Mr. Johnson if he would agree to stay the proceedings, because if he agreed to stay the proceedings until both parties could come, then he would stay the proceedings. Ms. White, through counsel, declined to stay the proceedings. And as a result, Mr. White then, realizing that the proceedings would not be stayed, which is what we asked for, in order to allow everybody to have their day in court, so to speak. Since this new event arose, then he contacted the Swiss authorities and said, you know, now that the proceedings are at stake, there are issues that have to be addressed, and I'm the person to do it. So, but I don't think that if Ms. White was afforded the remedy to stay the proceedings so that she could testify telephonically or she could appear in person and then declined, that she this is fraud on the court, because she had that remedy available and she chose not to do it. Secondly, it didn't matter because she got what she wanted anyway. She was able to testify telephonically. In fact, Judge Tran said, you know what, Judge Kasabian's ruling, I'm not gonna, you know, I think that this is important enough for Ms. White to be able to testify. And there was a second day added to allow the testimony, and it was only on the issue of attorney's fees. So I think that that issue, number one, it wasn't raised as an affirmative defense at all. It wasn't mentioned, and I think that he procedurally defaulted. But number three, I don't think that fraud was proven given the remedies afforded to Ms. White.
Thank you, Ms. Powell.
Thank you.
Book.
Your Honor, I beg the court for 1 minute of rebuttal time.
All right, 1 minute. Don't abuse it.
Thank you. Counsel's concern about telling sovereign nations how to process their cases is just not implicated here. No one's telling Switzerland how to process cases. We're telling Virginia whether to register Swiss judgments that do not comport with due process or not. The human rights provision isn't necessary. I didn't hear a word from counsel about how to reconcile the availability of a due process defense under 2931 with its absence under 26, unless it can be raised at registration, as Prashad and Morrison indicate. On fees and costs, the standard is clearly inappropriate. Judge Tran said if he had been able to consider the relative financial positions of the parties and other factors, he wouldn't have entered an order. He's not precluded from considering that. The standard is clearly inappropriate, as Arkansas and another state, which unfortunately is out of my mind, have already decided. Those kind of factors should be and are part of the clearly inappropriate standard. Under the fraud issue, at the time that the father made the promise, trial was on. There was no discussion of a stay at that point. The stay is a complete red herring. He promised not to attend if mother couldn't attend. He got his wish, and then he broke his promise. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right, thank you, Mr. Johnson. We'll come down to Greek Council and then take up the last case for the